We have a reading this morning from one of our few Unitarian Universalist saints, or at least we consider her such, Mary Oliver. A poem, A Summer Day, Alan Cantrell will read.
Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and be blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?
Let us have compassion for everyone you meet, even if they do not want it. What seems conceit or bad manners or cynicism is always a sign of things no ears have heard or no eyes have seen. You do not know what wars are going on down where the spirit meets the bone. So forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That is how the light gets in. Do you know what one of the most common questions that I get as a minister? Just curious, what do you think? Okay, it's actually number two. Any other suggestions?
What is meaningful life?
It's actually not one of the questions that I get, believe it or not.
What happens when you die?
That's about third or fourth, all the way in the back.
Why did you decide?
Why did I decide? No, people aren't really curious about it. And we're like, you know, should you keep doing that maybe? Maybe they ask that. Julian? Okay, I get that. That's like about 1.5. Michael? Huh?
Why are we here?
Why are we here? So do you see, first of all, I want you to notice the question why, okay? One of the number one, and Heather has a different answer, one of the number one questions that I get is, do you believe in destiny? Do you believe in destiny? So I've had to think about that question a lot, and here we are. You know, we're blessing babies. There's been a lot of we're doing blessing twins next Sunday, and my own son is going to high school next year. Ella is entering middle school. Some of you are watching kids go into college and go off from college. There's graduations. So it's kind of on our minds, and it's also our theme for this month, you know, destiny, the practice of preparation. And it makes me think a lot about how loaded that word is, isn't it? Because it implies all kinds of things about plans and cosmic preparation that we have no control over. And so when you hear that word destiny, I'm curious some of the word associations you have with the word. Just tell me, just shout them out. Say that again, Nancy.
Star Wars.
Star Wars, okay. Fate.
Purpose.
Destination.
Inevitable.
Meant to be. No control. What we make it. All right. Everything happens for a reason. So I want all those meanings to float sort of in the sanctuary with us, okay? And Heather and I are gonna each take a turn in responding to this question, because we thought it'd be good for you as your ministers to hear what it is that ministers, that at least your ministers say about this question. What do you believe about destiny, Nathan? What do you believe about destiny, Heather?
It's funny because I've actually never gotten that question. I feel like I get the why do bad things happen to good people all the time, but. So I know Nathan just said this sermon is technically titled, What Do I Believe About Destiny? An Answer in Two Parts, but it might be better titled, What Do I Believe About Destiny? Nathan's Answer and Heather's Five Additional Clarifying Questions. Because in writing this sermon, it became really clear to me that I don't actually have an answer to this question. And my knee-jerk reaction is, no, I don't believe in destiny. But I can't say that without doing some deeper thinking and deeper exploring. And I think that part of deepening our faith is living with doubt and uncertainty and seeking answers that don't let us off easy and really wrestling with those hard questions. So rather than giving you any answers, as I said, I'd like to instead invite you into my grappling. So I thought I would share a few of the questions that it brings up for me. Are you ready? Question number one. Are you fulfilling your destiny, Heather? And it's important to note that I hear this as a type of Charlton Heston Old Testament style voice from on high. And this question, especially when asked in that voice, inspires panic. At least in me. Does it inspire panic in you? Because how am I supposed to know? Who sets my destiny? What if I think what I think is my destiny is not actually my destiny, and how am I even supposed to know that? But then when I think about where I am in my life these days and all of those moments when I feel really sure that I'm in the right place and where I'm supposed to be, I look back and I can point to specific events that have led to where I am at this moment in life. And those choices that I've made and the things that have happened that I had no control over whatsoever, all those turning points that have led me to here. And that's also a fleeting moment, you know, there's all those questions. But looking back, it feels like it's the only way it could have happened. But then looking forward, it seems like there's innumerable paths forward. So I find myself wondering, do we humans tend to look back and call it destiny and look forward and call it opportunity or free will? Which leads to question number two. What do we mean when we say destiny? So I'm all about reclaiming religious language, as I think I've said here before, and it's still a word that I sort of shrink away from, that I haven't quite been able to reclaim enough to use in my daily life. It has rings, as you said, of fate, of giving up control, of lack of personal responsibility, of explaining why things have happened in the way that they did as part of a grander purpose. And that all feels great when things are going well, but not so great when we are struggling financially or when we've lost someone unexpectedly or when somebody is consumed by addiction or is being abused by a partner. Can that be part of their destiny? And then maybe I think about destiny as similar to destination, a belonging, a sense of knowing where we're going and where we're supposed to be. And maybe it's that sense of deep knowing that you are at the destination or headed toward a destination. Which then leads me to question number three. Is destiny something that's decided for us before we are even born? My answer is no, I don't think so. And who's doing the deciding anyway? And now I'm answering my own question with more questions. And you can see my March sermon if you want to know more about my thoughts on that. Which leads to question number four. If destiny is something that is not decided before we are born for us, then how does free will come into play? And can we control our own destiny? And here I find such a tricky balance between human beings having free will and the ability to make choices and realizing that there are so many things that are beyond our influence, beyond our control, and yet influence our lives. We love to tell children that they can be whatever they want when they grow up, but I actually think that's not fair. The reality is that's not always true. Circumstances limit our choices and our ability to exercise our free will, whether those are resources or opportunities or just the particular gifts and natural skills that we each have. And there's so much in reality that is out of control, out of our control. We love to plan our lives, to have it all laid out as though it's going to happen that way. But there's so much that we can't control or plan completely, We may retire at a certain time, plan to retire at a certain time, but then lose our jobs. We may hope and plan to have children, but experience infertility. We may plan our lives 10 years out, but have a scary diagnosis in the next year. And it makes preparing for our own destiny so very difficult, all of the unknowns that the future might bring. Which leads to question number 5, which is my last question. How then can we prepare for our destiny? So one of the ways I think we can do this is by letting go of that need for control, of holding our plans delicately. And perhaps one thing that I do believe about destiny is that there isn't one single destiny for us, just like I don't believe there's one single right soulmate for us. Otherwise, how would Nathan and I be performing so many weddings this summer? There's a great XKCD comment on the math of it if you want to see it. But I do believe that there are some paths, just like there are some partners, who are better for us than others. And that part of following a path is planning, but most of it involves being present and listening and being open to the paths. Earlier this week, I came across a fantastic quote, maybe it was destined to happen, adapted from Carlos Castaneda. I'm going to share an excerpt from it now with you. He writes, "Anything is one of a million paths. Therefore, you must always keep in mind that a path is only a path. And if you feel you should not follow it, you must not stay with it under any conditions. This question is one that only a very wise person asks. Does this path have a heart? All paths are the same. They lead nowhere. There are paths going through the forest, around the forest, or into the forest, but you must ask, does this path have a heart? If it does, the path is good. If it doesn't, it is of no use. Both paths lead nowhere, but one has a heart and the other doesn't. One makes for a joyful journey as long as you follow it. You are one with it. The other will make you curse your life. One makes you strong, the other weakens you. So before you embark on any path, you must ask the question, does this path have a heart? If the answer is no, you will know it, and then you must choose another path." Castaneda says that all paths lead to the same place, nowhere, which could be interpreted as a very nihilist statement, but I see it as saying something that feels very Unitarian Universalist to me. That in the end, we all die, and the most we can know of heaven and earth, heaven and hell, are right here on earth. And when we create and we choose heaven, when we choose a path with a heart. So perhaps any path that has a heart can be our destiny. And perhaps that is how we fulfill our destiny, by choosing a path with a heart. And perhaps we can only prepare for our destiny by listening, truly listening, to see if the path that we are on or the path that we are choosing is a path with a heart.
Ditto. Want to do a closing hymn? So when I think about this question, I grew up in the Midwest with a lot of country music, and one of the songs that, it's a newer song that would come up occasionally, was Let Jesus Take the Wheel. You know that tune? You can fit in whatever theological person you'd like in the center of that phrase, but it sort of implies that someone else is driving the bus, or the pickup truck, as the case may be, besides us. So my answer to this question is actually a story. So as many of you know, we expanded our family almost two years ago with Shaka, who's our golden retriever I've talked about before. And we're blessed to live relatively close to Lake Winthrop in Holliston. I've spoken about that place before, how it's one of my touchstones. And one of my, I don't meditate. I don't breathe in the silence. I don't sit in a posture. I should, but I don't. What I do is take him for a walk every day. And I take him down to the lake. Now, in the winter when there's ice, it was great because no one else was down there. But about a month ago, and he just runs ahead. It's this, you know, it's like he's free will, free dog, just off on his own, discovering what path, every path leads to, in his case, to the lake. And so he's way ahead of me, and I don't see him. And all of a sudden, I hear this guy and this young girl shouting, "No, no, 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 no!" And so I'm running up in my flip-flops, running up over the grass to the beach there. And there he is, my beloved dog, and he's chasing in the water a fishing bobber. Okay, you know, like the bobbers just floating there in the water. And he's like a big furry bass. He's just following it along. Just trying to and then finally puts his mouth right on, this is just the plat, he puts his mouth right on top of it. And of course the little girl is only about six, she's like, "Daddy, we caught a dog." "You can have him. He's yours." We caught a dog. And anyway, he didn't get the hook in him, thankfully, and we were able to untangle him. I was thinking about that moment, because, you know, as when you're a minister, one of the things you're always asking yourself is, how can I possibly turn this into a sermon? I was thinking about that moment and watching him follow that lure. And I was thinking about that in relationship to the question of destiny, and wondering a little bit about if that's how maybe sometimes it is, because the word vocation, which to me is very related to this question, I'm going to give you some etymology now, of course, right? It's from the Latin, which means vocare, which means to call. Now, in order for something to be called, you have to be able to listen. In order for you to listen, you have to be still enough to notice what is calling you, because not all things are of equal value that are calling you, right? Because sometimes it could be a fishing line with a hook. Sometimes it could be ego. Sometimes it could be wealth and money and only that. Sometimes it could be fulfillment and purpose. Okay, so hold that thought. So there's Shaka. Now the next day, so that was like a Sunday, I think. And the next day is Monday, my day off, and I always take him up, and it's much more peaceful. And we're coming up over, he and I, up over that same bank. And those of you that live down in Halcyon know exactly what I mean. There's this gravel parking lot, and there's a playground there. There's no one there. It's about 8 in the morning. It's a day like this. And all of a sudden, he takes off again. What's he going to? It's like, is there another person fishing here? And I see him, when he notices that he finds something, his tail is wagging and his nose and his paws are down in the ground. And I see up over, there's a rock there in the middle and trees, and I see behind the rock that there is a man laying on the ground in the mulch, right near the, what's that thing? Seesaw, right near the seesaw. There's a man, but not like just laying down, like soaking up the rays, like just sprawled out. And at the end, like his hand had just fallen open, at the end of his hand, in the mulch, is an empty bottle of, it must have been vodka or something. I thought he was, what did I think? I thought he was dead. And Shaka goes right up to him, and he licks his face. And the guy stirs awake. He's like, "Oh, good, you know, puppy, you know, this." I was thinking about this man who is obviously a homeless man. I've seen him before in Holliston. I didn't recognize him initially. Thinking about a couple things. Where did he spend the entire winter that we just had? And then also thinking a second thought. I call Shaka my baby. I call Emerson and Ella my babies. And I literally at that moment wondered, I don't know who this guy is. He is somebody's baby. And when his mom gave birth to him, hopefully she had dreams for him. Maybe she even believed in destiny, that he was destined to be something different, that would be a different place than the moment that he is at in his life now, which is sprawled out in the mulch on a playground in Holliston on a Monday morning, dead drunk on his back. And so I wonder, I go back to Shaka following that lure, and I wonder a little bit about what happened. All paths might lead to nowhere, but some, as Heather reminded us, certainly lead to places where we are destroying ourselves, and other places lead to where a place where we are fulfilling ourselves, right? What happened to him? What happened? You know, it reminds me, I don't believe in destiny in the sense that there's a plan that each of us are simply scripted to follow, because if I did believe that, I would have to get up in the pulpit and explain to each of you why good things happen to some of you and terrible, tragic things happen to others of you. I would have to have an answer for that, which is why, as you well know, I do not believe that things, quote unquote, happen for a reason. Accidents happen, happy accidents and terrible accidents. But what I do believe in is purpose. I believe this with every fiber in my being, that each of us are called to live a purpose. As Thoreau says, don't just be good for something. And the question that you and I have is like finding which of those lures that we are going to follow that allows us to be and to become the person that has the best potential to make that good, that solid, that strong, that blessed impact on the people around us. That's why we have free will. But it's not just an open landscape. We have, I believe, places that are leading us on. I would not be here in this room with you these last 12 years if that were not true. I wake up every morning knowing that I am in the place in my life where I was not destined to be, but called to be. And my wish for you is that you will listen and have the space to listen to the guide, and ask, as Mary Oliver does, what will I do with my one wild and so precious life? Let us say together, amen.